So do I go?
Oh, I didn't know that part.
This is worth repeating.
Okay.
This is worth repeating.
Live storytelling from Texas Public Radio.
Imagine it's 2 a.m. on the OB ward. My first child, Millie, is 27 hours old. Our room is dark, and light filters in from the hallway and makes a dim twilight around bassinet and bed. My husband, too long for the creaking recliner, has gone home for a good night's sleep. It's our first time alone together, and our room is perfectly quiet. She's just finished nursing, and her sleeping body lies between my breasts. I'm just getting used to the little sounds she makes, little gurgles and sighs. I can barely feel the weight of her 6 pounds, but I can feel her warmth. I can feel the soft puff of her breath, the tiny twitch of a little fist. I'm so full of love for this little creature, barely human. So full of love that it overflows in tears that meander down my cheeks. Now, I wasn't this sentimental during my pregnancy. There was seldom any sighing over tiny little pink socks and stores. There were no letters written to my daughter in utero, as my pregnancy book suggested. On most days, I had to remember to talk to her. I had to remember to tell her I loved her, unsure that I actually did. But on this night, there is no doubt about my love. I would do anything, give anything for her and for happiness. I love her with every part of my being, every humble cell, every higher thought. And it's because of this flood of love, that I finally know for sure that my own mother loved me. All of my life, I've wondered what my mother was like. I don't know much about her, and so sometimes I take the facts that I do know and spin a story with them. Sometimes I imagine her in the months before her death, maybe on the day that she finally went to the clinic. It was 1976 in Los Angeles. She was 23 years old. My dad was in jail. Her parents weren't talking to her. She probably went to the clinic alone. I know these things, but I make up the part about the waiting room. I imagine men and women sitting in hard plastic chairs, rustling magazines, and talking to each other in hushed voices. The little boy, 5 or 6, running through the aisles, who stops and stares when he comes to my mom. And maybe for the first time that day, she felt self-conscious about her frayed jeans and her stained t-shirt, her greasy hair. She waits a very long time, and then she's taken into a little room where they give her a test, and then she waits some more. She already knows what the results of the test will be, but someone's told her that if she takes the test, she can get some money for the baby, but that's not why she'll keep it, for the money. When the doctor comes in, he says she's pregnant. He tells her they don't do abortions there. She'll have to go somewhere else. He says there are many groups that will make it possible for her to bring the baby to term. But if she's just going to drink or do drugs or whatever, she might as well just get an abortion. She stares at the dull metal of his stethoscope and wonders why he thinks she doesn't know this already. He asks her if she has any family. She says yes, and then she says nothing more. She already asked her dad for help. He said, no, I know this for sure. In fact, he said, you've really fucked up now, haven't you? It was their last conversation. That night before she went to sleep, wherever it was she slept in those days, I imagine that my mother thought of her unborn child the way I often thought of my unborn child when I was pregnant. Perhaps she imagined that dark world inside her, her little girl, she'd always known it was a little girl, floating in a shaded pool, the cord keeping her from floating off into the darkness. She closed her eyes and made a little promise that she'd look after her. She wanted to do right by her little girl, whom she'd already named and whom she'd already, long ago, decided to keep. 3 weeks after she gave birth to me, my mother left me in a motel room in Hollywood. She laid me in a dresser drawer because she didn't have a cradle. She nestled me between some t-shirts and socks and tucked my baby blanket around me. She went out to turn a trick. We needed money for rent, food, quite possibly for drugs. Her strangled body was found the next morning on a hillside. She'd been beaten so badly, her face was unrecognizable. Her case has never been solved. I know these things from police reports and conversations with cold case detectives, but I imagine the stuff that I can't get from reports. For instance, I like to think that she kissed me before she walked off into that dark night. I like to think that she loved me, that I made her happy. Tonight, in this hospital room, I imagine my mother nursing me and holding me afterwards. When I feel Millie's breath against my chest, I know exactly how my mother felt the night I was born. I know that she loved me with every part of herself, every humble cell, every higher thought. Sometimes I wonder who was in the hospital room with her. Surely not my father, whom I've never met. Not her parents. She was alone. Were the nurses kind when they told her to push? Or did they look at her with cold eyes when they said, "It's a girl," and smile tightly? There were no flowers. There were no cards or gifts in my mom's hospital room. There was nothing. Her own worn clothes folded neatly on a chair. My mother got pregnant 3 years after Roe v. Wade. She was broke. She was alone. She'd never really even had a family. And so I've often wondered why she kept me. And now, holding my child, I think the answer was just that. She wanted to start a family. She wanted a baby. She wanted not to be alone. She wanted someone to love. And I think now how she only had 3 weeks of this holding a baby in your arms, those little gurgles and sighs, those whispers of smiles and sleeps, in sleep. Only 3 weeks of this pure, pure love. I cry at the thought of only having 3 weeks. All of my life, I've thought that her killer's greatest crime was taking my mother away from me. But now, holding my baby, I know that that's not true. The true crime was taking a mother away from her baby. It was taking her away from the love that she had so bravely fashioned for herself. It was crushing it with the brutal force of blunt fists and tight rope. And I know this now. I know what my mother was thinking right before she died. In her last shudders and spasms, in that terrible moment before she blacked out when she knew that she wasn't going to get away, my mother thought about her baby girl. My mother thought about me.